This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Only 1 year until the 2016 elections and still no nominees. How long has this been going on? Well, anyway, the latest polls of the Republican primary show Donald Trump holding a slight lead over Ben Carson. But where's the original favorite, Jeb Bush? Meanwhile, in state politics, prominent state Senator Bob Rucho announced his retirement from the General Assembly this week. He was the main author of North Carolina's tax reform policy. He'll stay on through next year's elections. And an ethics complaint against Governor Pat McCrory was dismissed this week. The governor had been accused of breaking ethics laws by not disclosing his stock ownership in the online mortgage broker Tree.com. The State Ethics Commission found that there was no probable cause. With me to talk about this and more, the political junkie, Ken Rudin. Hello, Ken.
Hello, Frank.
I want to start actually with the latest news. President Obama just announced that he has rejected the Keystone XL pipeline, a pipeline that would bring oil from Alberta to the U.S. Not a surprise, exactly. The administration had been heading in that direction for a while, right?
You're absolutely right, although I guess the big surprise is it's taken this long for the actual announcement. Bernie Sanders, one of the Democrats running for president, has said from the beginning that this would be a big mistake, both for environmental reasons and not to create the kind of jobs. It would not create the kind of jobs that its proponents said. Hillary Clinton came out against it in September, with an R at the end of the word September, after kind of hemming and hawing on that for the longest time. But, you know, the president was very straightforward about the reasons today. First of all, the big reasons is that he says that the U.S. is leading on climate change, and to have approved this pipeline would have undercut the U.S. leadership. But he says that, you know, the U.S. record of cutting carbon pollution and all those things are just going in the right direction. But he also said that this pipeline has become an overinflated role in politics. It's become a symbol, and it really has, because the proponents said that it would lower gas prices, and it probably wouldn't. The opponents would said that this could be a climate disaster, and ultimately, I don't think it would have affected it either way. But I think, again, as the president said, given the fact that the U.S. is leading on climate change, this would not have been the right message to send.
Does his announcement deflate it as a political message? Obviously, the next president can revive the whole question. Is it off limits now as a political topic?
No, of course not. Of course not, because the Republicans are still in favor. They still convinced that they still argue that it will create jobs. Of course, the argument that it would lower gas prices, that kind of has been knocked out from them, because gas prices have been lowered, as the president pointed out. It's been lowered, I think, 70 cents in the past year, a dollar plus in the past 2 years. So the price of gas has come down. And perhaps if that were not the case, there'd be more of a political argument in favor of the pipeline. But the Republicans will argue for it. And to be honest with you, some Democrats in North Dakota, where the pipeline would run through, have supported it as well. It's certainly just like Obamacare. The Supreme Court decision on the Affordable Care Act didn't end that political argument. The president today will not end the argument on the Keystone Pipeline.
All right. Well, let's hear what other arguments are afoot and abroad in the presidential race. As we said, it's been going on for a long time. I think when the Republican primary battle started, Rutherford B. Hayes was in the running. He's out. but Donald Trump is hanging in there, and Ben Carson is insurgent now. Tell us what's going on in the polls.
Well, the polls of what you just described is not only nationally, but in Iowa as well. There's a new CNN poll that just came out today that had, I think, Donald Trump within two points ahead of Ben Carson. I will point out, and I'd like to point this out, that 4 years ago, exactly at this time, Herman Cain was the Republican presidential frontrunner. Rick Santorum had 1% in the Republican polls, and he went on to win the Iowa caucuses. So, again, you know, we keep talking about polls, and we notice that Chris Christie and Mike Huckabee have both been banned from the big debate next Tuesday because their numbers are not good enough. But again, I mean, I still make the argument that most of the country is not really paying attention to it. The political junkies are, and you and I are, and certainly Iowa and New Hampshire are. But, you know, if you ask people who they like, well, I mean, we've never seen anybody like a Donald Trump or Ben Carson. I suspect that that's a big big reason of why they're so doing so well in the polls. But for example, today Politico reported that Ben Carson for the longest time has been saying that he met with General William Westmoreland years ago and got a full scholarship to West Point. And when Politico said, "Well, this didn't happen," the Carson campaign said today that, "You know, you're right, it never did happen. It's our error."
Right.
So, I mean, there were so many things that Carson and to some extent Trump say that are just mind-boggling, and yet it doesn't affect them in the polls. Again, it's November. We still have 3 months to go before Iowa. But, you know, if we have a week to go before Iowa and we still saw these numbers, then I'd be much more fascinated by it.
But I do wonder, taking your point that, you know, as you say, Herman Cain was at this point, it was in the lead at this point, you know, 4 years ago. But to your point, there was not the kind of attention on the race because there weren't these charismatic characters. Is the comparison perhaps not as apt today because more people are paying attention owing to perhaps Donald Trump?
That is absolutely fair, because I think certainly the anger, the frustration with Washington, the frustration with politics as usual is far greater in 2015 than it was in 2011. You're absolutely right about that. And I think the big story also is that the so-called establishment darling, you don't mind if I call you darling, do you?
Is that
Jeb Bush was supposed to be the clear front runner in almost every poll. He's polling at 5%, 6%. His performance in the debate last week or the other week, when he attacked Marco Rubio with a planned assault that went absolutely nowhere. I am stunned, more so than Ben Carson and Donald Trump, stunned that Jeb Bush is just not catching on at all. And it's not that there were one or two people in front of him. There are five people in front of him, and I don't see that changing.
What do you think? What happened?
Well, he just didn't prepare for questions about his family. He was never somebody good with a soundbite. He ran when he was governor of Florida. He ran in a Republican Party that doesn't exist today. The anger, the vitriol, the battling of the establishment. That's not what we saw when he was first elected in 1998.
I want to get to local politics or state politics here in North Carolina. There was an ethics complaint pending against Governor McCrory regarding his financial disclosures. That was dismissed this week, the ethics panel finding that there's no probable cause in that case. There's still another question around the governor's taking the case of a political donor to the State Department of Health and Human Services and acting in his behalf, calling a meeting to bring a contract to his back to life after DHHS said they didn't want to do it. All of those things are kind of in the air. But as I say, the ethics complaint has been dismissed against the governor. I'm wondering about the impact of these kind of things. You know, the past two governors in this state, two Democrats, Bev Perdue, Mike Easley, also surrounded by ethical questions. You know, Mike Easley had to take a plea of campaign impropriities and had his license suspended. Democratic governor Mike Easley, Bev Perdue after him, did not run for reelection after a number of questions surrounding her campaign. The use of campaign funds. Are voters sort of immune to this now? Is it politics as usual, or do these things matter to voters?
No, I don't think they're immune at all. Matter of fact, we could talk about this later, but there's a new Elon poll that shows that Roy Cooper, the likely Democratic nominee for governor next year, with a 45-40 lead over Pat McCrory. Now, I know North Carolina governors haven't always been allowed to run for re-election, but ever since they have, they've always been elected. And I think there's a feeling that even though, as you point out, the ethics complaint against McCrory was dismissed by the State Ethics Commission, the headlines still say that there's questions about whether he disclosed his fund, findings, his stock ownership. The fact that it still becomes headlines, as you say, the questions that Mike Easley had, that Bev Perdue has had, are still there with McCrory, and it has to hurt. Even if they're all dismissed, there's still headlines, and voters see it every day.
And the contract I talked about, I think it said DHHS, is the, it's actually with the state prison system.
Right, the prison contract.
The prison
exactly.
contract. So all of that's still swirling around. Well, let me talk about some other issues here. Senator Bob Rucho, who was the architect of the tax reform plan, a key senator and an influential senator and a Republican, says he's not running for re-election in 2016. What does that mean going forward? Because I think he's in a pretty safe district. He's likely to be replaced by a Republican, and yet he has a lot of power in the Senate.
You know, I've looked at that. I mean, when I saw his announcement that he's retiring, I looked at other members of the legislature from both parties, and I don't know if it's the largest class in a long time, but it seems like a lot of them are bailing. And I just know that there's been so much acrimony between the Republican legislature and McCrory from the moment Governor McCrory was elected that I don't know if people just, you know, I mean, are they all doing a John Boehner saying enough is enough? And they just disgusted with it. But I see a lot of members saying they're just, you know, that they're going to take their ball and go home because this may not be worth it. I mean, he's been around for a long time. He says he's accomplished everything he wanted to accomplish. But I just wonder if the atmosphere is so toxic that people saying it's just not fun anymore.
Well, look, I've only got 30 seconds left, but a congressman who didn't say that was a man named Howard Coble, who we lost this year. 30 years in Congress, helped to make this a competitive state for Republicans. Give us the 30-second sketch of his legacy.
He was a great guy, and matter of fact, he was the embodiment of all politics as local. He cared much more about textiles and his district than he did about national conservative issues like abortion. It didn't do him well in Washington. He didn't get the kind of chairmanships he wanted, but he was beloved back home, and he was one of a kind. He was really a good guy.
Political junkie Ken Rudin. Thank you, Ken.
Thank you, Frank.
Just ahead, we talk with Peyton Reed, the director of Ant-Man, about his latest Marvel movie series film, and all of that is on the State of Things. From North Carolina Public Radio, broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.